ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just to get here to where we are today, an orbital launch vehicle that is nearly done, a launch site that is essentially done, I think it's a huge milestone.
Shortly, we head to Queensland, where another milestone has been reached for an Australian mission to send a rocket into space. And how much tourism is enough? A controversial sign in a coastal WA town has kicked off debate over tourist numbers, with some residents saying tourism is putting too much pressure on their town, while others say the town needs the visitors.
The resources of the town are stretched, the environment itself is stretched, William Bay National Park is under pressure, over-visited, congested. It's no longer a good experience for tourists.
I'm Alex Harmon and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk country, Perth. We start the program in Ballarat, where tonight hundreds of people are planning to stand together at a rally for women's safety following the alleged murder of three women in the regional Victorian city within the past 3 months. This rally is held just a week after the body of 23-year-old Hannah Maguire was found in a burnt-out car in bushland southwest of Ballarat, and as police continue to search for the body of Samantha Murphy. Reporter Lexi Junewick is in Ballarat and has been following this story. Lexi, firstly, what is planned for tonight for this rally in Ballarat?
Well, Alex, as you mentioned, we're expected to see hundreds of people from not just Ballarat, but from right across the state unite in the Ballarat CBD from 5:30 our time. And basically what this is a chance for people to unite and take a stand against violence against women, which unfortunately we've seen a lot of examples of in the Ballarat community. Tragically, we've had three women allegedly murdered within the space of 2024 so far. So an incredibly difficult time for the community, and such is the mood within our region that there is, you know, a real push for, a visible show of support for the women here. And I think tonight we won't just see, as I said, you know, people from the local community, but I think we can expect to see people from right across the region and indeed the state unite in this show of support for not just these women, but indeed, everyone who is affected by violence against women.
Do you know what they're going to be doing at the rally?
So we're expecting, Alex, to see a walk throughout the city with people encouraged to bring candles and signs. And we're also expected to hear several speeches. I think, you know, one of them will be organiser Sissy Austin, who is a real advocate for women's rights in our local community. And I think we're expecting to see as well some of the family members of these women who have been, unfortunately, the alleged victims of murder or violence, including Hannah Maguire's family is expected to attend tonight. So I think it will be an incredibly moving event and a really important one that gives people the space to, express their sadness in wake of these events.
This comes a week after the body of Hannah Maguire was found in a burnt out car and her ex-boyfriend being charged with murder over her death. Mm. And of course, the search for Samantha Murphy's body continues. What is the mood like there in Ballarat, particularly for the women of Ballarat?
Yeah, it's a really challenging time, Alex. I think, you know, having, you know, putting my reporter hat on, but also as my, you know, I live here at the moment in Ballarat, and I think just speaking to women, not just while I'm doing my job, but, you know, out of work hours, there's a real sense of, I think, fear at the moment, you know, that these women that were allegedly murdered were either, were victims of people allegedly that they knew. In Samantha's case, she was allegedly murdered by someone she didn't know. So there is, you know, a real sense of fear and frustration that we can't just go about, unfortunately, our everyday life without thinking of, you know, potential danger being around the corner. So I think tonight is a chance to kind of say that this is not on, and we know it's not on, but I think it's event that is needed to reiterate that point and reclaim, you know, the right to be able to go about our everyday lives in a regional city that, you know, there is a really strong sense of community here. And I think given these deaths that we've seen throughout 2024 so far, there is a sense of that community being rattled. And I think, you know, maybe not just in tonight's event, but there is a real sense of a need for continued support for community. And what that looks like, I think, you know, will be different to different people. But I think, you know, events like this one tonight are a good kind of step in the right direction.
You mentioned Sissy Austin, one of the organisers of tonight's rally. She has spoken to the ABC about what motivated her to organise tonight's event. Let's hear from her.
Myself and many women in Ballarat are feeling, you know, in shock. That's triggered my, organising the rally on Friday through having conversations with other women in our town. Yesterday, we felt that this is what's needed at this moment in time to come together and demand our safety in this town.
That's rally organiser Sissy Austin there. And just finally, Lexi, what is the latest information that police have provided on the search for Samantha Murphy?
So, Alex, we know that yesterday there was a significant search in Enfield State Park, which is south of where I am in Ballarat, and that ran right throughout the day, involved, you know, a raft of resources, including cadaver dogs from the New South Wales Police Force. Unfortunately, that yielded no trace of Miss Murphy. Subsequently, we've seen a smaller search in the Ballarat area today. Police have not disclosed where today's search effort has been conducted. We know, though, it involved specialist resources from Victoria Police, including the Missing Persons Squad. So as for updates from today, police haven't announced anything significant at this stage, but we do know that they are pretty much out there every day conducting inquiries and continuing this search. They are determined to find answers for not just Ms. Murphy's family, but the community, and provide closure.
Our reporter in Ballarat is Lexi Jinnewick. Lexi, thanks once again for bringing us up to date here on Australia Wide.
Thanks so much, Alex.
You're listening to Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
And you are with me, Alex Hyman. It's great to have your company here on Australia Wide. When a pair of brothers came up with a plan to build and launch the first Australian-made orbital rocket, people thought they were crazy. Nearly a decade later, the pair are preparing to send a 23-metre rocket into low Earth orbit from the small North Queensland town of Bowen. Back in February, here on Australia Wide, we spoke to Adam Gilmore from Gilmore Space about their ambitious plans to grow Australia's space industry and to get an update on their rocket launch planned for May. Well, their Eris rocket needs final approval from the Australian Space Agency, but preparations for liftoff are well underway, with the rocket being moved into the upright position on the launch pad, ahead of an event that's expected to draw many a space enthusiast. Rachel Merritt has this story.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It was a plan hatched more than 10 years ago by a pair of brothers who grew up dreaming of space exploration. And now, James and Adam Gilmore are hoping to become the first to launch a locally made orbital rocket from a small North Queensland town.
Everything we've done is for the first time. You know, we had to get approvals from local, state and federal authorities, multiple authorities. You can imagine going to them and saying, I want to build and launch an orbital rocket from Australia. A lot of people shake their head and say, you're crazy.
The journey to blast Australia into the global space race has led the brothers far from their headquarters on Queensland's Gold Coast to the coastal town of Bowen. They founded their company, Gilmore Space Technologies, in 2013 with the aim of launching satellites. Adam Gilmore says it's taken a team of 100 engineers and manufacturers to build the 23-metre, 30,000-kilogram rocket.
What Australians need to understand is all of that space technology is provided by foreign countries and foreign companies, and that makes me very nervous that if any of them decide not to support us anymore, we could be left high and dry. And so what an orbital vehicle that's made in Australia, launched in Australia, gives the nation is the ability to put our own space technology in space and have our own resiliency on technologies that are critical to our everyday life.
For the first time, the rocket has successfully been lifted into a vertical position on the launch pad at the newly opened Bowen Orbital Spaceport. But James Gilmore says they're not expecting they'll reach orbit on their first attempt.
Expectations is a tricky one because space launch in Australia is very new. I think a big part of what we do is actually educate the public and the stakeholders around what success looks like. Just to get here to where we are today, an orbital launch vehicle that is nearly done, a launch site that is essentially done, I think it's a huge milestone.
Foreign countries, such as the United Kingdom, have used remote Australian sites to test their own rocket programs since the late 1950s. But Associate Professor Michael Heitzman from the University of Queensland says the choice to launch in North Queensland has geographic significance.
Being close to the equator, and you can use the energy from the Earth's rotation that you then don't have to use extra fuel. But then in addition to that, in order to launch into orbit, typically you launch towards the east. So that also means it's preferential to have areas that are sparsely populated towards the east. So launching over the ocean or launching over unoccupied land.
And if all goes to plan, experts say it will propel the town and Australia's space aspirations onto a global stage.
I think in the long run, I think once we can break through and particularly establish not just the ability to build rockets and launch them, but establish the launching facilities and have the workforce trained to launch efficiently and so in a cost-efficient way, then I cannot see why, you know, you wouldn't see companies like SpaceX or NASA or some of the others coming to Australia to launch some of their rockets.
With a population of around 10,000 people, the coastal town of Bowen is better known as the gateway to the world-famous Whitsundays and the backdrop to Baz Luhrmann's film Australia. Mayor Ryan Collins says he hopes establishing a permanent base for rocket launches will be a further draw card for tourists.
You know, we see from around the world that, you know, visitors flock to areas, particularly in the United States, to see satellite launches and rocket launches. And, I think that's something that we can really put our flag in the sand for here and be known for is something that we do quite differently here in the north of Whitsunday. So.
We're expecting the launch to happen sometime next month. Are you anticipating a lot of tourists will flock here to witness that?
Yeah, look, I think we will see an influx of you know, particularly people that are very much interested in astrology and have a keen interest for the space industry come through. I think it's something that we'll definitely need to build on into the future, make sure that we've got good access points for people to come and see satellite launches. You know, I think that we see this as being the first of many opportunities. So, I think the important thing is that we've reached this milestone. We can get this one up, hopefully successfully, and then build on that from there.
Back in North Queensland, the team at Gilmore is waiting for final approval from the Australian Space Agency to lift off. The agency says they're working closely with the company to meet the federal government's launch requirements. But James Gilmore says even reaching this point has been a dream come true for the brothers.
We used to, play as kids and dream about what we might want to be when we grew up. Very much inspired by my grandfather who knew a lot about space and taught us a lot about space, and obviously being a Star Wars movie buff, I think really helped to kind of shape that passion and drive.
Rachel Merritt reporting there. And you can see more on Rachel's story, including pictures of the Eris rocket being moved onto the launch pad at the ABC News website. Just search for ABC News and North Queensland.
This week on Landline, regional Australia growing its own doctors to keep them in the bush.
There's very good evidence that if you do all of your medical school training in a rural setting and do your internship, you have a much higher chance of staying in a rural setting.
And burning invasive native scrub in an old coal-fired power station to create energy. That's Landline, Sunday 12:30 on ABC TV and streaming on ABC iView.
ABC Australia Wide.
Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for ABC Australia Wide. And we always love it when you email us. We love to hear what's happening in your part of the world. Our email is australiawide.radio@abc.net.au. That is australiawide.radio@abc.net.au. Let's head to WA now. School holidays mean many families make their way to country towns for a break from the city. And tourism has become a key sector for many, if not most, regional communities. That's certainly the case along WA's south coast, but not everyone is happy about it. In the town of Denmark, a controversial sign has brought national attention and raised debate on just how much tourism is enough. Jamie Tanu has the story.
It's a busy time of year on the roads of Australia's southwest. Here on the South Coast Highway, tourists make their way to and from the town of Denmark. For those driving during the Easter break, they would have seen a sign with a provocative message.
Hometown, not tourist town.
At least that's what the sign said before it was vandalised. It was put up by a group of residents who call themselves the Denmark Sustainable Tourism Action Group. They say the town's tourism industry is growing unsustainably. Helen Spencer is their spokesperson.
Can't get parking, have to queue, food shelves empty, there's issues with telecommunications, not enough resources for the amount of draw on that. This place doesn't have a lot of water. There are those sorts of inconveniences.
The number of tourists coming to Denmark has increased from an average of 140,000 in 2016-17, all the way up to 170,000, according to the most recent data. With huge forests, clear beaches, quality produce, and a small town feel, it has drawn in many looking to escape the hustle and bustle of the city.
The resources of the town are stretched. The environment itself is stretched. William Bay National Park is under pressure, over-visited, congested. It's no longer a good experience for tourists.
Miss Spencer says it's a debate she's heard many times in WA's southwest, in towns like Margaret River.
I think over the first part of the last decade, yes, I think it is. It was helpful, is helpful. It's the over-tourism, the too much tourism, the please get it back in balance that we're looking for.
The sign didn't go down well with everyone. It was posted online, receiving attention on social media, and it eventually went to national television.
As a Denmark local, I'm embarrassed by this sign. Please come to our beautiful town and enjoy its beauty, hospitality, and support our local businesses. Please ignore the ignorant few,
said one comment.
Imagine feeling so entitled that you feel no one should visit anywhere else in WA because you chose to reside there,
said another.
I was quite shocked. I happened to see it quite early in the morning when it had first gone up. I think the sign itself, you know, offering that that dichotomy of one or the other really was a mistake and not what the community in Denmark actually see their town as.
This is Denmark's Shire President, Kingsley Gibson.
You know, when I saw the sign and when I saw it hit social media and the responses, it was clear that that people felt unwelcome to come here. I don't think that reflects the broad sentiment of the town.
Ms Spencer says the sign wasn't meant to make tourists feel unwelcome, but to prompt discussion.
Honestly, it's primarily intended to place pressure on local government and state government to stop this undue, unsustainable promotion of tourism growth. That's not to say no tourists. It's just to say this needs to be balanced, and at the moment it's not.
A number of local businesses in Denmark rely on tourism. Steve Birkbeck is a farmer who also runs a popular paddock-to-plate restaurant. He says the traditional pillars of Denmark's economy, like forestry and farming, are struggling, and diversification is needed.
I've never seen a worse set of circumstances for the beef industry in this great southern area. And the only form of opportunity we have is value-adding and building up
provenant.
And that's through tourism or
correct. Things
of bringing tourism?
Tourism, agritourism, diversified tourism, eco-chic tourism.
Mr. Birkbeck is building an eco-tourism accommodation site, which he says will be a key example of how the tourism influx can be handled responsibly.
In terms of, I think, some of the concerns of some of my neighbours, I share the concerns, and we've got to deal with them. And I think it's really important to say that I don't think the people that are expressing concern are opposed to tourism. They want to be empowered and consulted.
That's Jamie Tanu reporting there from WA's South Coast. And finally here on Australia-wide, almost 170 years ago, a Dutch ship was wrecked near Robe in South Australia's southeast, soon after offloading about 400 Chinese immigrants who wanted to make their fortune in the Victorian goldfields. 16 Dutch sailors died in the disaster, and little remained of the ship as it sunk under waves up to 6 metres high. Maritime archaeologists believe they've found where the ship lies, but it's hard to get to under pounding surf and metres of sand. They are now looking for clues around Robe to find out about the early interactions between Australians, the Dutch crew, and the Chinese gold miners. Eugene Boisvert has this story.
A bell at Robe Primary School that's believed to have come off the Koning Willem de Tweed shipwreck called students in from recess and lunch for 125 years.
It's really loud. It, like, echoes over the whole school, so everybody knows when it's the end of recess and lunch.
But, as Olivia says, it's not the real one anymore.
It's a replica of the bell because the last one we had chipped, so it's in a museum now.
That museum is the Robe Customs House Maritime Museum that sits on a hill in the town overlooking Guishan Bay. James Hunter from the Australian National Maritime Museum is visiting Robe and the museum to look into what happened to the Koning Willem de Tweed, or the King William II in English. He's not totally sure the bell came from this ship, but he's even less sure about a cannon that's part of a memorial near the museum.
The bell less so, but I'm a little suspicious of the cannon. And the only reason I say that is because it's a British gun. If you look at the design and the manufacturer, it's a British-made cannon. So I'm trying to work out a way to try to figure out where that gun may have come from.
The bell and the cannon are the only intact objects that remain from the wreck.
The ship was absolutely destroyed in the wrecking event. I believe it was the police journal here in Robe described it as going to matchsticks within a half hour. It arrived here June 15th, 1857, offloaded all of those Chinese passengers. They then began the rather arduous overland trek to the goldfields, mostly on foot. And Koning Willem was kind of caught in the bay for the next 15 days. The weather was not in their favor. And then they had a severe southwesterly gale blow up on the 30th of June, at which point the captain, Henrik Gietzen, made a decision to try to run the ship aground on Long Beach. Sandy seabed. He thought, well, if I can ground it there, it's probably the safest place I can put it to get the crew off. They did that. They ran aground, but tragically the ship started to break up very quickly, and they managed to get 16 of the 25 crew into a boat, but as it moved away from the wreck, it was hit by a really large wave and capsized, and so drowned all those 16 individuals.
Objects from the ship, like crockery, would have washed up on the beach soon after the wreck, while others could still be found today, says Valerie Monaghan, who's the secretary of the Robe National Trust branch.
People with metal detectors, you know, still pick up things on Long Beach and that, and it's really important that, you know, we keep track of what's found and keep the things that are really worth keeping.
Dr. Hunter and conservator Heather Berry are hoping people from Robe will come forward with items found recently, as well as those passed down in their families over the years that could give clues about the wreck.
It all provides information. And even then, like, if we do have a ceramic, James in particular is really good at knowing the different patterns, maybe where it came from or time period, even if it's just a small little shard, you don't need the whole plate. So there is a lot of information that can still be gained out of these things that people are finding washed up.
Ms. Berry has put together a booklet to help people know how to preserve the objects they find. It's been written particularly with Robe residents in mind, but will also be useful for other seaside communities where there were shipwrecks.
Conservators usually work out of museums, and if you would like to engage a private conservator to look after your objects that you found, it can be very expensive. So what this booklet does is it just gives some at-home tips for you to look after your objects. So we were just wanting to give a little bit of a stopgap for people to be able to do at home.
That booklet will be available online soon on the website of the Australian National Maritime Museum. Ms. Berry and Dr. Hunter plan to return to Robe next summer to do more diving around the area where they believe the wreck is.
That was Eugene Boisvert with that story from Robe in South Australia. And that is Australia Wide for this week. I'm Alex Hyman. I'll be back again with you on Monday. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.